Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Thursday, the 25th of April, Anzac Day. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. The nation's been marking Anzac Day with dawn services this morning.
We gather in the quiet dark of dawn to remember Australia's first Anzacs, who landed on the shores of Gallipoli 109 years ago today. As we cast our thoughts to them, we think of them sailing away from the calm seas of safety toward the carnage and horror of war.
They went with songs to the battle. They were young, straight of limb, true of eye, steady and aglow.
We who are gathered here think of those who went out to the battlefields of all wars but did not return. We feel them still near us in spirit.
Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them, lest we forget.
First Nations people have a long history of serving in Australia's Defence Forces, but their sacrifices haven't always been recognised. Indigenous Affairs reporter Tani Jash spoke with one family that's proudly served in the military for four generations.
On Wiradjuri country in Albury, New South Wales, Darren Moffat is weaving together gum leaves to make a wreath for Anzac Day.
You know, these should be native and a little bit different to what normally gets laid, I guess.
This Anzac Day, Darren will lay the wreath down to honour the contributions of First Nations servicemen and women.
Well, it's an opportunity, I guess, to recognise the service that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have made in the defence of Australia.
Serving for almost three decades, the Bidjigal man comes from a long line of military men.
Both my grandfathers, paternal and maternal, my father's service in the Navy, my service and my son's service in the Army. So I think it's important that the recognition is there and I feel privileged that I can do that.
Retired Warrant Officer Class 2, Darren served in Australia's largest peacekeeping operation in East Timor in 1999 as an air dispatch transport platoon sergeant. Compelled to give back, he also trained the next generation of new recruits.
Really an influential and privileged position to be able to turn a civilian into a soldier at the end of the day.
Darren's grandfather, Harold James Stewart, fought on the front lines of Bougainville and New Guinea, but he didn't discuss much of that time with his family and didn't march on Anzac Day.
I think blackfellas weren't even able to join the RSL back in those days, so he had nowhere to go to and there was no counselling. He just dealt with it, you know, he's in his own way, being a religious man.
10 minutes from Darren's house lives his mother, Sandra, the family historian.
It reminds me every day of my heroes.
Hanging on her walls are photos of the seven military men of the family.
I'm very proud of them for stepping up.
Sandra's husband, Neville, was a Navy medic for more than 20 years, serving in Vietnam and the Gulf War, a big shift that she and her two children had to adjust to.
You marry that person. You don't sort of marry his job and then you realise that you're in this too.
Across the Pacific Ocean, in the Solomon Islands, Darren's son Ethan is currently serving as a combat engineer with the Australian Army.
Hello.
Hey, Dad, what are you doing?
Hey, bud, I'm talking to you. What
From
are you
a young
doing?
Age, he knew he wanted to follow in his dad's footsteps.
How my old man is, I guess, the morals and the values that he holds, I believe, comes from the 27 years of service that he did. And, I aspire to be just like him.
He's among around 3,000 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander defence personnel currently serving. This Anzac Day, Ethan will be honouring his family members from afar.
Think about Pa, I'll be missing you.
Yeah, I miss you too, bud.
First Nations man Darren Moffat, ending that story by Tani Jash. A joint counter-terrorism team from New South Wales Police and Australian Federal Police conducted a number of raids across Sydney yesterday as part of a major investigation into last week's stabbing attack at an Assyrian Orthodox church in the city's southwest. Seven young people were arrested and another five are being questioned. Here's New South Wales Deputy Police Commissioner Dave Hudson talking about the raids.
It was considered that the group, subject of our attention, posed an unacceptable risk and threat to the people of New South Wales, and our current purely investigative strategies could not adequately ensure public safety. As a result, we determined that we needed to escalate our activities and that overt action was required.
New South Wales Police say there isn't a current threat to public safety and that there's no link or threat to today's Anzac Day commemorations. The alleged murder of young mum Molly Ticehurst by her former partner on bail for violent offences against her has sparked an urgent review of New South Wales bail laws. It'll look at why the accused was granted bail and whether there's need for broader reform to better protect women facing escalating violence. Legal experts say there also needs to be a shift in how courts assess risks of domestic violence when considering bail. John Daly reports.
The community wants change, and leaders are vowing to deliver it, as alarming figures reveal the extent of gender-based violence in Australia.
Oh, it makes me feel sick. I think about this every day. It's part of my role. I think about all of those lives taken.
That's New South Wales Women's Safety Commissioner Hannah Tonkin. According to data interpreted from advocate groups, 25 women have died from gender-related violence already this year. One of the latest deaths is 28-year-old mother Molly Ticehurst in the New South Wales town of Forbes. A magistrate's court heard how her former partner, Daniel Billings, who's been charged with her murder, was also on bail at the time. It was for charges of rape, stalking and intimidation against Ms. Ticehurst. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns says the system failed the young mother, and he's instigated an urgent review.
I am saying right now that the system obviously failed Molly and the status quo is not going to work.
Crown Advocate David Kell will assess whether urgent reform to the Bail Act is needed. The Bail Act Monitoring Group, consisting of police and other government and legal agencies, will look at the operation of bail laws. Women's Safety Commissioner Hannah Tonkin will join that group, potentially on an ongoing basis.
My capacity as Women's Safety Commission, I can help the group to properly consider the really specific issues that arise from offending that's related to domestic and family violence.
Do you think there are deficiencies in the bail law, the Bail Act, as it stands?
Well, that's a matter that will be part of this review. So I'm not going to preempt the review and the outcome of the review.
The Commissioner says New South Wales has already made some important reforms, such as tougher penalties for strangulation, which is a key indicator of future escalation, and criminalisation of coercive control. Melbourne Law School Professor Heather Douglas studies the legal system's response to family and domestic violence. She's more concerned with how the courts apply the existing laws and weigh up the risks when granting bail to those charged with domestic violence offences.
It's a tragedy, again, that we're seeing, but I think that there are real concerns about the way the current law is implemented. So introducing more law, those problems would remain.
She says changing the legal system's culture and understanding of domestic violence is vital.
I think police training, prosecutorial training, legal training, we're not required to learn about domestic and family violence in our law schools, so I guess that's a good place to start.
Heather Douglas says advice from domestic violence support workers is also often overlooked in bail considerations.
They can offer good expertise to courts, but they're often neglected when we think about expertise in the courtroom. So I think that would be something that we would like to see more openness to listening to the expertise of those kinds of witnesses.
Initial findings from the New South Wales review of bail laws are expected by the end of May.
John Daly reporting, and victims of family violence who want help can call 1-800-RESPECT. That's 1-800-737-732. If it's an emergency, call 000. The United States President Joe Biden says long-awaited support for Ukraine will start flowing almost immediately now that he's signed a major new foreign aid package into law. The legislation also includes more aid for Israel and could lead to the banning of the social media app TikTok. North America correspondent Jade McMillan reports.
A legislative victory for Joe Biden after months of congressional gridlock.
It's going to make America safer. It's going to make the world safer. And it continues America's leadership in the world, and everyone knows it.
The critical breakthrough on the foreign aid package had come days earlier, when Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson defied the hard right of his party to push it through the lower chamber. It was on the president's desk within hours of passing the Senate.
It was a difficult path. It should have been easier and should have gotten there sooner. But in the end, we did what America always does. We rose to the moment. We came together. And we got it done. Now we need to move fast.
The legislation provides more than $60 billion US dollars worth of weapons, ammunition and air defence capabilities for Ukraine, with the first round of assistance expected to ship almost immediately. Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, expressed his gratitude at a time when his country is grappling with dwindling supplies and struggling against Russian forces.
Now we will do everything to make up for half a year spent in debates and doubts. What the Russian occupier was doing during this time, what Putin is now planning, we must turn against him.
The package signed by Joe Biden also includes billions of dollars in more assistance for Israel and Taiwan, and a boost for US shipbuilding to support the AUKUS deal, under which Australia will obtain nuclear-powered submarines. Also wrapped in, a provision that could spell the end of TikTok in the US.
Make no mistake, this is a ban. A ban on TikTok and a ban on you and your voice.
TikTok CEO Shou Chu took to the social media app to criticise the move that will ban the platform in the US unless it's sold by its Chinese owner, ByteDance.
Rest assured, we aren't going anywhere. We are confident and we will keep fighting for your rights in the courts. The facts and the Constitution are on our side and we expect to prevail.
Aside from potential delays caused by legal challenges, ByteDance has at least 9 months to act under the legislation, a deadline that will fall well after November's presidential election. And in a sign of TikTok's popularity and influence among young Americans, Joe Biden will keep using it to campaign. This is Jade McMillan in Washington, reporting for AM.
Solomon Islands has just held an election, but none of the major parties won enough seats to form a majority government. Intense talks are now underway to negotiate support for minority government. The incumbent pro-Chinese Prime Minister Manasseh Sogavare leads a crowded pact, even though his party lost more than half its seats. From Honiara, here's the ABC's Solomon Islands reporter, Chris Enrita Omanu-Leong.
On the streets in Solomon Islands' capital, Honiara, there's one question on everyone's mind. So who do you think will be the country's next prime minister?
I like Gordon Dasi, Lilo. I want him to become a prime minister.
I think him, Junior Peter Ken Lorena should be our next prime minister for Solomon Islands.
After a week of counting, all 50 seats in Solomon Islands' national election have been declared. No party has gained a clear majority, but caretaker Prime Minister Manasseh Sogavare has emerged with 15 seats, the largest number. But that's half of the 37 seats his party had coming into the election.
Obviously, there is a big, big interest by the world, because there have been a number of decisions that have not gone down well with the international community, especially the Western allies, led by the United States of America, Australia, New Zealand.
Mr. Sogavare has led Solomon Islands through 5 years of rapid change, most notably pulling the country closer towards China as competition for influence in the Pacific region intensifies. It has meant the election is being closely watched by Australia and the superpowers. In an interview with local media, Mr. Sogavare even went as far as to accuse the United States of interfering in the election in his home province, claiming the U.S. Embassy promised to pay the school fees of people who voted for his rival.
Let me write to the United States of America.
I'm going to write to the United States of America, the U.S. Embassy. Our people, the people who voted for me, we won. They're saying, let them pay for these voters. You look after us.
Today marks the start of an intense negotiation period that could take weeks, with parties and independents horse trading to try and build a coalition and form government. And it's a crowded pack, with opposition leader Matthew Wale and Peter Kenilore Jr., the son of the country's first prime minister, seen as possible potential rivals to Mr. Tsvangirai. Both men have committed to review the country's pivot towards China. Yet one man, former Prime Minister Gordon Darcy Lilo, has emerged as a dark horse after returning to Parliament.
I have been Prime Minister before. I was never selfish about it. I love this country and I want this country to progress more.
Election watchers say last week's elections was clean and peaceful. But the negotiation process to build government has historically seen accusations of corruption and under-the-table payments. Veteran journalist Dorothy Wickham says surprises are expected.
With the elections for the Prime Minister, it's secret ballot. It can just swing anywhere at the last minute.
11 independent MPs were elected and they're expected to play a crucial role in forming government.
Reporter Chris and Rita Omanu-Leong, and we've contacted the US Embassy in Honiara for comment about Mr. Tsvangirai's claim. There's a team effort underway to protect precious freshwater species found in Queensland. The Mary River that winds north from Sunshine Coast is home to a long list of rare and endangered animals, including the prehistoric Australian lungfish and the endangered Mary River turtle, which is famous for breathing through its bottom. There's been some worrying results from the first extensive survey of the region in decades, but scientists, land managers and traditional owners are joining forces to find new ways to bring back the animals. Stephanie Smell reports.
The water in this Mary River tributary is chest deep and freezing, but the team is plunging in to check the nets they've left overnight.
Amazing! We got all four! That's so great!
They've netted four rare turtles, an endangered Mary River cod, and an Australian lungfish in the Sunshine Coast hinterland. The future of these animals and the river system they rely on is under new scrutiny by this team made up of scientists, land managers, and traditional owners.
Yeah, he looks really good. He's really healthy.
The team has done the first comprehensive fish survey of the Mary River catchment in about 30 years.
535 total.
You know, this might be our last best chance to do something to recover these species before it's too late.
Professor Mark Kennard from Griffith University's Australian Rivers Institute says there's signs breeding levels aren't great.
We caught about 9,000 fish, but only 30 of those were Mary River cod. And most of those were quite large fish, so we're worried that they're not recruiting very well.
They didn't find many small Australian lungfish either, but endangered Mary River turtles turned up in places they hadn't before. Professor Kennard says it's looking like the years of hard work rehabilitating and restocking the Mary River haven't worked well enough yet. But there's still hope and new ways to help.
We're trialling different designs of hollow logs and woody structures, and then we're hoping that the cod will spawn in those and it'll provide good juvenile habitat for them so they can recruit into the adult population. For the young hatchling turtles, putting fine woody structures, snags and sticks into the river, they'll hatch, crawl straight down into the river and find really high quality refuge habitat.
The researchers camp together and share meals on each trip. The CEO of the Burnett Mary Regional Group, Tom Espinosa, says that's key to success.
In the modern world, in meeting rooms and things like that, you don't establish those connections. You keep it professional. Here, you have to engage on a whole different level.
Because you're sleeping next to each other in a tent.
Snoring next to each other for me, primarily.
Collecting and sharing cultural knowledge is a priority too. Jinnaburra man BJ Murphy has been able to visit parts of the Mary River for the first time.
I think we're in a really good turning point, you know, within society where we're coming together, backing culture with science and trying to look after country together.
The team says as the study progresses, more farmers are granting access to their land.
They're very passionate and I'm happy to have them here.
The group is on Tom Ryan's place this trip.
We want to leave the land in much better condition than when I found it.
It's hoped the project will span at least a decade, with state and federal government funding currently keeping it afloat.
Stephanie Smale reporting. That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. It must feel like a never-ending battle for Rupert Murdoch. His British newspaper group is continuing to face legal action more than a decade after the phone hacking scandal came to a head. Now he's settled with the actor Hugh Grant. Today, ABC Media Watch host Paul Barry on how Murdoch has paid out many millions to avoid trial. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.